Good morning. Let's do a quick mic check. Make sure everybody's good.
All right. Testing. 1, 2. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yep. Eric, give me a quick. All right. Nice.
Testies. All right.
Testies or testing?
Something like that.
Okay. All right. No homo. Gotcha. All right. Real quick. Let's go ahead and get this going. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. And thanks for being here on episode 37. This is actually PSX, so I'll be taking over for the time being. Jerry is currently out focusing on family for now, but he will be back. I want to do a quick shout out to Moltres and the Rack Supply team for launching Sharp Protocol and Megalo. It's about damn time. So it's been a while. And just for anybody, I think it's only actually 2 devs. They don't have the manpower, but it's a really inspirational thing to see that even with little resources, you can accomplish much. I will list their link here in the I will link them up in the nest here momentarily.
All right. Now, a quick disclaimer. This podcast should not be considered financial advice. The contents of this broadcast here and or on any other platforms are for educational and entertainment purposes only. And cite our own personal opinion. In order to make the best financial decisions that suit your needs, please conduct your own financial research and seek the advice from a licensed financial advisor if necessary.
Okay. Oh, got a quick question for you, Eric. Actually, it's more of a bad joke, so it just kind of popped in my mind. So answer me this. Like, what do you call a reverse exorcism?
demonic impregnation.
It's when a demon tells a priest to leave the child's body.
Oh my god, that's oh.
I'm probably going to hell for that one.
Starting off pretty controversial this morning.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. Yeah, I just needed a good laugh, so it's like something to wake me up. But yeah, dude, Eric, thanks for being here with us today. I was like, how you been, man?
I've been all right, man. It's been a hell of a week. I got through yesterday. It was a big day for me. So I'm gonna take like my first week off in like the last 3 years. So I'm like trying to get on that mindset. I'm in a good place. How are you doing?
Yeah, man? Yeah, it's typically like, I mean, we've, I think like everybody's been scrambling around. The bull run supposedly is supposed to be coming out. We're at the halving event. You know, you're busy with your projects, but I mean, for our audience, you know, who don't know who you are, what you do, what you've accomplished, or I mean, give us some little insight.
Yeah. So I'm the co-founder of AstroVault.io, first DEX that monetizes liquidity, but fundamentally a bit more about me, who I am, what I've done. I studied economic philosophy in college. You know, what the hell are you going to do with that? I got into casinos where I did everything game theory type stuff. Eventually made my way into DeFi because, you know, I got banned everywhere from card counting and needed a new side hustle. But DeFi, all of crypto basically, has been a bunch of brilliant devs designing entire economies. They had no business doing that realistically. And so I'm coming in and fixing stuff. So I started AstroVault. I'm also, I do a lot of tokenomics consulting for a lot of different groups. If you guys know Archway, I was the tokenomics guy. It's my name on the econ paper. But I have quite a few clients at this point. And yeah, just trying to build the economy side so that things make sense to grow decentralized businesses instead of people just showing what's possible now in Web3, doing something that makes sure that like value is accrued and accrued to the token. So a lot of rogue tokenomics crap.
You said that devs have building economies that typically, those are pretty strong words, have no business trying to develop an economy. There seems to be, might be a disconnect between the two, like versus those who code and those who understand economics. What's the misunderstanding? It seems like something that's, you know, on hindsight, it's more ideological, and then in practice, it's just a shit show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, what I'm saying shouldn't be controversial. It's bold to assume that because you know how to code and you had a good idea and you're able to build an infrastructure layer, that you mm-hmm. should know how to arbitrarily build out a new type of economy around it. Like, to me, that's the bold assumption that everyone's just had and been okay with. Like, you look at Adam tokenomics, it's like, it's a joke. And like what people are making big deals about, like, oh, well, you guys want to change these numbers. We've had these numbers for 2 years. It's like, yeah, well, they were set arbitrarily by somebody who didn't have any business like designing this kind of stuff. Like what they built with Adam, what they built with Cosmos, like all of this is brilliant. But why are these like arbitrary metrics from people who have no business designing economies, like just set and accepted? It's really immature as a space. And I'm not even... I'm bringing it to the next step of maturity, but realistically, like, economists are really good at optimizing the systems that are in place. They're really good at like taking all the data and getting it as precise as possible. And so people are finally bringing economists in place, but they're optimizing broken systems. And so it really takes the philosophy angle and understanding economic design instead of economic optimization to bring in a model that can eventually be optimized in a way that makes sense. And luckily, I found quite a niche for myself here because there aren't a ton of people with that experience that also have enough of a background in crypto.
Yeah, for the record, I didn't say controversial. I said strong words. I mean, this is like honest feedback to individuals who are more developers rather than economists. And then it sounds to me like some lanes are being crossed over when it's, hey, stay in your lane, but you want to play economist, and we're seeing the fruits, if you want to call it the fruits of the labor, you know, rear itself. And unfortunately, much of, at least from what I can tell, from someone who has a basic understanding of economics, trust me, I think I've seen some of your papers to where like I have no clue what I'm getting myself into. So I'll let you do you, and I'm gonna be on my side. If I have any questions that doesn't make sense, which I know Ness and I are gonna dive in deeper. What I'm really curious about is, you know, what led you into the crypto space? What fascinated you? Because I think when we were talking earlier, I mean, you were counting cards. I mean, it almost sounded like your story was more like a movie in the making. Like, hey, this is how you hustle a casino. And let me show you how.
Yeah. It was fun, man. I worked in casinos I went to dealing school before I went to college and didn't finish that. But yeah, full casino background. I've done everything in casinos. That's where my first real expertise comes from. But yeah, banned counting cards, had some coworkers that were into crypto. So I started looking into it. And I've always, I don't know, been a bit more of a libertarian, fight the establishment type people. It's never made sense to me that, like, oh, I have to have $250,000 before I can go lose my own money in the stock market until then I have to pay somebody else to lose my money. Like, that's bullshit. And that's the real system that we've all grown up in. And so the idea that you get this freedom, you get this autonomy and agency through crypto is something that really appealed to me. It's just broken. So I dabbled around. I found a bunch of exploits and protocols. I made a decent amount of money from like just messing around with some stuff, but it's not good enough to just make personal gain if the entire system's going to crash. Like I believe in the system. I want DeFi to work and to win. And it's, I mean, you start messing around with these protocols in like DeFi in 2019, 2020, like it's a joke and things are starting to get better, but not much. So since I eventually realized that, oh, the people building this really don't know what they're doing. Like I thought there was just steps, but no, there is no like end design in place. Then I realized that I need to go help them out. As I helped more and more people, as I solved more and more problems that they didn't really know that they had, I've gotten more and more connections and been trusted with more people. Had brilliant developers and team luckily stick by me and help build out some of our visions. And it's rolling. We're making a nice little niche for ourselves.
Nice. And congratulations to that. But, you know, as you're solving problems, but one of the huge problem, like going back to the casino thing, isn't that the issue itself? Is like you have these institutions where they try to write out the rules, but it's always the human aspect that tries to implement it is where the problem starts to disconnect, starts to become the issue unto itself. It's like one of those, and we see this in big government institutions all the time, where it's like it's the whole, you know, rules for thee but not for me situation, where you know, I'll make the rules, but you know, I'll implement them when it's convenient. You know, say like a casino where they have a set amount of rules and you're playing by the rules, but when you start winning, and you're always betting against the house and they're losing their money, all of a sudden it's like you get banned for that.
When it comes to like government and whatnot, rules for me and not for thee, that's a huge issue. But what I think is likely a bigger issue is who's making the rules. Like the rules that are being followed in general at all, like they don't make sense. The people who are building them don't really understand what they're doing. Like the problem we're facing in crypto, where we're going around to these decentralized governances and we're trying to design things in a way that makes more sense. Like we need that at the top too. The people who are controlling what's going on with the dollar and what's going on with legal policy, they don't really have enough expertise to be doing what they're doing.
But then like take, and I'm gonna go into Luna Classic, and I know what you're probably thinking, because I'm like, I think you've been here long enough to know, like, oh, it's a shit show.
I think it's going to work.
Was that sarcasm?
I don't do that.
Okay. It's like with, you know, there's the centralized approach versus the decentralized approach, and Luna Classic has been quite the experimentations, whether decentralizing works or not. And I think that's a process that's still ongoing, as community, and that Ness and I and Jerry have been a part of, is still an ongoing thing. We don't know if it works. Maybe it might be too soon. It's just a matter of like, hey, it just needs more time till people learn, figure each other out. I mean, it's not like there's a head honcho who's leading the charge. It's just it's a very diverse community with various voices, different points of view, and opinions. I'm not saying diversity for the sake of color, if you know where I'm getting at, but you know, but we won't go there. That's a different conversation. But anyways, you know, and then you hear the debate. Sometimes the debates bear fruit. Quite often that I hear them where they're unfortunately not so productive, where they typically devolve into more, unfortunately, name calling, insults. So, you know, where do you see decentralization going as time goes by?
Lord willing, get a lot more organized.
Well, how
There's
do you do
beauty
that?
with centralization.
Oh man.
You need to, this will continue to mirror and get more advanced towards what we've seen in the actual political sphere. And then I can't wait till we have that like Renaissance to Baroque barrier where we break through past what we've been able to establish in terms of real world governance and make it to a point that's more efficient governance than we've come up with. But we haven't gotten to the place where we're mirroring, like, say, the US governance. And I've helped design protocols that intend to do that. And we'll see if they roll out over the next year or two. But it will get to that where it's not just your money buys votes, which, you know, the joke is that's the way it is in real politics too. But that's obviously the way it is right here in Web3. So there are ways to get past that. But you need this kind of like vote for figureheads or authority. I know Tank's here in the crowd, and Juno has been really struggling with this, where there are a ton of cooks in the kitchen. Most of them are undoxxed, so like they can say whatever they want. There's no real ramification, and they're supposed to be leading this, like, you know, tens of millions of dollars protocol, and there's no real end in sight. There's no like, well, who should be steering the ship or why? They finally voted in like Tank and Ninja Zan, who like is a dox individual, runs Crypto Dungeons, and now they're able to, Lord willing, at least give it more direction, which is imperative. I'm you need some kind of central team. You need some kind of governance. I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but things aren't going to get built if that's not the case. You're not going to have proper biz dev and connections if that's not the case. If you're building decentralized business, as is my intention, I know it's not the only use case of crypto, but you have to have like somebody steering the business, somebody driving to the next step, somebody checking in on KPIs. And that's not going to happen in a fully decentralized manner. You can have decentralized participants. You can have decentralized governance approve and monitor who is steering the ship, but someone has to steer the ship and somebody has to know that there is a destination you're trying to get to. And in pure, beautiful decentralization, that doesn't happen. And so nothing happens.
Okay, I want to take a step back with everything with you, Eric, and ask you, you know, how did you first get into studying game theory, and what did you find appealing about the subject? Is there any resources that you would suggest for somebody that wants to get into it, but is on a much more elementary level than you are? I mean, you're so enthusiastic about this. I feel like you love what you do, and that's awesome, man.
Yeah, 3.3. No. thanks, great question. I have been obsessed with games since I was literally a kid. I've been playing chess since I was like 3. Like elementary school, I was playing chess by myself in recess because I was a little nerd.
I was going to guess that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been playing every card game known to man since I was like 4. Like, I was like basically by myself, home alone all the time as a little kid. I just like played card games and stuff by myself. So I've always been obsessed with games, sports, whatever. And I, you know, want to win. So I'd go into like whatever theory I got into stats, like before I was learning what stats actually were. So I could figure out how to like best beat games, because that was always interesting to me. As far as like traditional resources go, honestly, the best book I've read pertaining to game theory, it's not particularly about game theory. But Adam Smith's, what's it even called right now? His first book, the one that introduces the invisible hand and whatnot. It's basically called the Pillar of the Foundation of Capitalism. It just makes so much sense going into like how all of these different countries can and will work together to make a more global pipeline, because every single trade is a win-win situation. And it takes a little bit of effort to carry that over into game theory. But like the idea, like I won every Monopoly game my entire life because I made the most trades, and people knew that going in, they wouldn't want to trade with me, but then they're like, oh, this trade's going to advantage me more than it advantages you. Like, that's fine. I'm just making more freaking trades than you. Every single one's a win-win.
Okay, so that first book, Adam Smith, now this was written in the 1700s, correct?
Oh, man, I thought 1800s, but yeah.
I think it's called Theory of Moral Sentiment, 1759 is what I'm getting.
Ooh,
here.
That's not the one I mean.
Okay. I just Googled it real quick, so I... I have no idea who Adam Smith is, I'm being honest.
Fair. Wealth of Nations.
Yeah, Scottish. He's Scottish, correct?
Some European. I don't know.
Okay, Wealth of Nations was in 1776, so good year for America.
Yeah, great year.
Yeah, okay.
So real quick, I want to get your feedback on this one. I just saw a post by Ash Crypto. I just nested it in up above, and it says new EU AML laws ban all anonymous crypto payments. Any cash payments above 10,000 euros will become illegal, while also anonymous cash payments above 3,000 euro. Now, I can't confirm the accuracy of that, but I wanted to see if you know, somebody from an economist and a governance point of view, like, what are your thoughts on that and how does that affect crypto in general, if any at all?
Oh man. Yeah.
It's a loaded one. I know. I mean, try to get your head right. I mean, it's a post, so it's not like there's an article that goes into detail. So let it sink for a moment.
There are stages of spheres of influence, of spheres of control. If you have police officers will, you know, serve and protect. Ideally, they're going to monitor, they're going to, you know, punish, arrest, or whatnot, people who are under their jurisdiction, people who are under their dominion, and some people won't qualify as under their dominion, and they have to let them go, because fundamentally, they work for the company, the United States of America, and, like, yeah, literally, like, the company, and anybody who isn't technically an employee of the company isn't bound to their jurisdiction. Like, this is the like, how this is legally set up. Like, when we're born, we're set up as an entity, which is our name in all caps. That entity is set up as an employee of the like corporation of the United States of America, maybe the subsidiary company of the state that you're born in. And that entity is under the jurisdiction of the cop. If you move on from that legal entity and become like a sovereign citizen or like person, or maybe you're from like a different country, which is under a different corporation, like from a legal perspective, you're no longer under the dominion of these cops. Similarly, go to a higher level, governances, like the different governments of the world, are structured where they only control their corporation. If you think about this, it actually relates really well to crypto. Atom governance only really governs the Atom token and the Cosmos Hub chain. Even though it is like the mothership of all Cosmos, allegedly, a governance prop on Atom governance can't actually affect Archway or Juno or anything else. Governments are going to try to impact and to affect everything they can. The more interconnected and complicated the global economy becomes, the harder it is to enforce taxation. The easier it is to justify things outside. Everyone has British Virgin Isle companies. Everybody has Panamanian foundations. And the U.S. is like, oh, darn, I can't enforce this. Nike is paying $6 billion a year to their Panama Foundation for the rights to use the Nike logo that they arbitrarily gave that Panamanian foundation so that they could pay them $6 billion a year and get that away from U.S. taxes. Like, that is the actual world that we're living in. So, yeah, it's these realistically small governments trying to enforce taxation on people that they can't really control. And unfortunately, we're all going to have to deal with the consequences and whatnot. But it's unfortunately probably a sign of a failing system. But it is going to be a kick in the nards.
I want to touch upon something that you just brought up. A lot of people don't realize that they're actually a subsidiary corporation when their parents sign their birth certificate. I do believe that's under maritime law. It's a really twisted situation, in my opinion. One of the things that I wanted to clear up that you said, you refer to people who revoke that status as a sovereign citizen. And my understanding is it's more accurate to refer to them as a American state national would be the status. Yes. That you want to seek, whereas a sovereign citizen, I think like police fall under sovereign citizens. And people often get that mixed up, and you get these YouTube videos like, look at this idiot sovereign citizen. And it's like, well, they're not a sovereign citizen. They're probably trying to be an American state national, but don't know how to fill out the paperwork correctly. And this is a really, really quiet subject that shouldn't be quiet. Americans should understand what's been done to them when they were born. And their parents signed their birth certificate unknowingly, signing them up to be a subsidiary corporation of America. So I just wanted to clear that up a little bit. And I find it very interesting that you knew that, because that's a subject not a lot of people talk about. Can you elaborate upon that anymore?
I sure can. I like that you know that too. And yeah, state national is definitely the way to look. If you Google sovereign citizen, that's not what I mean. But yeah, state national, the idea is, yeah, when you're born in a hospital, and if anyone can take a baby to a hospital and pass it over, and they can be subjects of the government, and they say that that's what happens with every single person when they're born. As soon as, like, a couple weeks after you're born, you get your birth, like, you get a certificate of birth, which is for your personhood, but then you get a birth certificate, which is for your corporation, which is your name in all caps. Every time there is a birth, and a person basically is registered under the company of the United States of America, at this point, they're bonded with $1 million in cash. That's like, should be owned by you as like a co-author of, co-owner of this entity. This is all real, guys. I know this is weird.
Yeah, the bonds are traded too, aren't they?
The bonds are traded, the bonds are rehypothecated. And yeah, you can look up your own like UTC or USB number or whatever, and like see some of this stuff online. It's wild. But when you realize, like, at the large levels, what the Fed, what the governments are doing, like, how are we only earning enough in taxes to cover 23 to 24 days out of the year, but we're still paying our bills for 365 days? And it's because they're using all of this bonded money from all of the people that we've had that's accumulated, that's grown in the stock market for hundreds of years. And when people die, they have no access to it. So they're using that money to pay for our longstanding debt. And at that point, it's like, if that's the real money we have, not the taxes that we owe, why are we raising taxes to try to make it 23.1 days out of the 365 a year? You know, if we can print money, why are you still taxing, kind of thing? So, all of this is very pertinent to how to build, you know, crypto models, how to build something, Lord willing, better, or at least understanding the situation that we're in. But that's, maritime laws, like, that stuff's real, man. It's weird.
Yeah. We're going down a rabbit hole. Let's keep going. I like this. Like, I'm already, like, caught off by surprise. Okay, so what I'm understanding is that at the moment of birth, it's not like money and value is already being stolen from us. Am I understanding?
sign your birth certificate. It's not your moment of birth, actually, because they sign you away as a corporation. And it was a loophole created, I think, in roughly the 1850s, so that you were a subsidiary corporation, so you're treated differently. And this ties into income tax law, as you mentioned.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes, we're publicly
treated. Look into prisons. Look into courthouses. Why do courthouses have clerks? Like the entire court system is a bank for the government. Like that's how it is legally set up, is as a bank, which is like a subsidiary of trust laws. Like, there are things that the courts can't govern. And it's really weird. And if you look through the paperwork of, like, if you get arrested and you're going to be served, like, how do you serve prison time? Like, how is that legal? And it's because you're set at a bond. There is a specific price that you could pay to get out of your crime. How come the rich never go to jail? They're able to pay that off. And if you can't pay that bond, they can hold your physical person as collateral in a jail cell. That is how this actually works from a legal perspective.
And I think it has to do something to do with England, too, because my understanding is our bar association is actually out of England. So in a way, I think they own part of it. I could be mistaken there, because it's a pretty complex subject and it's hidden. Like, we're all pushed into a scenario where we're supposed to think that this is bullshit, and it's not. It's a bunch of legal loopholes to basically keep people financially enslaved.
I mean, that's one conclusion. Another conclusion is, like, if I was designing something from scratch and I didn't have technology that's now available, like, I don't know that I wouldn't make something kind of similar. Like, if you need legal handling, and it's weird putting legal perspectives onto a physical person, obviously, then you'd need a separate legal entity that's ascribed to them. Like, it does make sense. I don't want to be like, oh, they're all doing this to, like, shut us down. Like, maybe. It really depends on who's in control. At the same time, if good people are trying to set this up, like, it still does make sense the way that it's handled. There has to be some way to do what is being done. But it's like, we're not taught this in school. And this is stuff that is important. This is how the actual world works. And the idea that it's done without our knowledge is what's most sketchy to me.
I'm really trying to let everything, what I'm just hearing, sink.
Good Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's just, well, it's a hell of a way, like, wow. It's like, no, this is how it works. And it all makes sense, all things considering. Like, I feel like I wanted to say conspiracy theory, but at the same time, all things considering what's been happening for the past 3 years, it's like that boat has completely sailed. You know, going into, like, tokenomics, you know, oh my God, my head is still stuck on the whole birth and bond situation.
I'll get you some resources on it, PSX, so you can start.
Yeah, I am so curious. I want to know more about that. Like, I'm already mind fucked as it is, but I was wondering something you said that I wanted to go into tokenomics about your understanding, but I'm wondering if this is somehow, like, is there something we can take from that piece of that conversation, bring it into tokenomics? Like, where does that fit, if at all? And then what I'm also curious is about, like, how does that translate into Astro Vault, if at all?
Yeah,
it's loaded.
What's great about tokenomics and crypto in general is you can abstract away all the bullshit, and you can put, like, real easy, simple names on things and break things down in a way that makes sense. I saw a nice tweet the other day. It's like, hey, look at this shit coin. There's only one issuer, one wallet holds like 70%. It's unaudited, all this other stuff. It's like, oh wait, no, that's, like, actually the dollar. And it's like, if you look at real currencies and real businesses in that mindset, it's a lot easier to see, like, you know, how things are actually run. And we can, like, the idea of, like, a $1 million bond issuance, like, oh, okay, every time you have a new wallet that gets instantiated and has a full KYC backing with a soul bond token, they print more tokens and it goes to the community pool, something like that. And the community pool is managed by this. Like that's actually not, it's a lot harder to describe in the real world than it is in tokenomics. So I kind of like abstracting away all the bullshit and just dealing with raw ideology. In essence, which is what I feel like I get the opportunity to do. It's fantastic. I sometimes get at war with, like, lawyers and whatnot, but it's important to understand the legal implications for pragmatism. But at the same time, like, every philosopher's dream is to, you know, build the perfect society. And mine, I get the opportunity to try to build the perfect economies. Like, if we didn't have to worry about that, what could we enable? So when it comes to Astro Vault, as I'm sure you guys have noticed, I'm pretty big at understanding your axioms, knowing the foundations upon things, like, of things upon which you're built. Astro Vault is a very, very, very big innovation for or DeFi for DEXs in general. Reason is the bonds that people have for the US government, they are rehypothecated. They don't just have $1 million per person who's been a citizen. They have way the fuck more because that money's been invested in all these companies and has turned into far more money. And that is why they're able to keep hoarding going on. Meanwhile, we're trying to combat that system with DeFi in a means where the money isn't hypothecated, where banks don't have not even just like a fake 10% reserve rate that they've then bypassed whenever they need to. They have to have 100+% reserve rate, which means they can't actually invest or do anything with anything, which means they can't be operated profitably. You see, every DEX ever launches a token, it goes to shit because the token doesn't earn any money because they built a business that doesn't earn revenue. That's broken. And now they're like, oh, well, we can charge trade fees. Like, how much can you make in trade fees? Your token has a multi-billion dollar valuation and you're trying to get it to go another 10x. Like, that's, you're not going to charge enough from trade fees and you're just going to like rape your users. Meanwhile, what we're able to do is hypothecate that money and invest that money. And so we're doing it as safely as can possibly be done where the bulk of liquidity is staked. This is the same model that Coinbase is using right now. And like Coinbase is CeFi. Like, it's might be the worst exchange, but it's the best bank. You know, it's some kind of hybrid in the meantime. We're all lucky that it exists for the most part. But they are able to earn so like billions of dollars of Ethereum because all of the ETH that they have from all of their users is staked. Sure, you can click in and opt in to stake it. It's staked whether you opt in or not. Just if you choose to opt in, you get part of the rewards that they're already earning on your Ethereum. And all they need to do is keep enough of your tokens liquid that they can process your withdrawals like a bank. And if they don't, then there's a run on the bank and they shut it down. But oh, sorry, we're going to pause our Atom withdrawals for 21 days like they've done several times. So we now get to do that in DeFi. And we're the first ones to figure out how to do that. But it means if zero people trade on AstroVault this week, we're going to make $22,000 in revenue. With no trading fees, with zero users, we're going to make $22,000 this week in revenue.
I was going to make a comment. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was like, when you made a comment about like, we're lucky to have Coinbase around, it's like, man, that's so debatable. It really depends on who you ask.
Yeah. And idealism versus pragmatism is always at war. And it's like, if we were ideally building like a full new solution, it wouldn't involve Coinbase. But if we're trying to build something that has a realistic chance of taking over, it's going to take the Coinbases of the world as the intermediary steps to get to a point where people are not only know how to, where the technology is comfortable enough, but where there's regulatory precedent. Because, I mean, what we're talking about, you know, building an alternative to is what the entire world's built on. And you can't just overthrow, you know, multinational economies without consequences.
I just realized something. I've got another loaded question, actually probably two in one, so get ready for this one. So are you suggesting that that AstroVault can be scalable up to, say, like at the Coinbase level? And does the tokenomics can the tokenomics support that?
Sorry. I think that AstroVault can be scalable way beyond what Coinbase could possibly scale to. And yes, the tokenomics support that.
You sound very confident. It's almost scary.
People have told me that for years. And everything that I've said was going to happen is actively happening. I told people that we'd be making a shit ton of money from our liquidity. We are. And they're like, oh, your pools can possibly stay balanced. We're the only LSTs that haven't depegged. ST assets are trading for several percent underneath their underlying asset. They have to. So meanwhile, we're building DEXs that don't make money and then value extractive auto-compounding derivative components that can't possibly be liquid. I'm like, oh, everyone's going to love to use these. I'm like, none of this makes any sense. But I'm just barking into the wild because it doesn't fit the narrative of the people who, you know, designed the improper economies in the first place. So we're trusting the same people who didn't know what they were doing the first time to do things the second time. It's like, they don't have, they have more experience. It's not good experience.
So, oh, that's a good one. It's not good experience. They have experience, but it's not good experience. Okay, so then, what's the whole, okay, from your perspective, and like, say what you mean, if you can be honest. I don't know if, I mean, this is representative of your views, not AstroVault, not anybody on that team, just yours, if you're okay with this. But what's the overall issue with the Atom governance? You and Reese have a really good relationship. Like, you know, we start with Juno, Terra, Luna Classic, whichever, just go if you can, if you're comfortable.
So what's the problem with Atom governance? There's a ton. It's not just, it was set up incredibly rudimentary. Like, why is the veto set at 33%? Why is a passing vote 50%? Why is it only like the tokens you have that are your votes and not individual users? Like, there should be a lot more factored in. It's like a fifth grader made a new governance system, and it's really cool that they did because it hadn't been done before. But now a lot of those kids are in high school and college now, and it's like, well, we could do a lot more. It's like governances that existed, and then, like, you know, if you look through history, like, sure, you start with a king, and it's like, hey, Doquan can, like, govern everything, and all the multisigs run through his wallet, or, like, the big multisigs or whatever. Then there's, like, you get to more and more complicated, more checks and balances as you go, and a lot of that isn't really built out yet. And it was an experiment. Why should they have spent so much time building that out? They had no idea, like, if Atom was really going to take off. Like, how many projects have been invented? How many people have tried different types of security and consensus mechanisms? But Atom now has, like, panned out. Like, now it's like, oh, crap. Like, we're really here now. And all the people who built it are like, filthy rich. And it's hard to get rich people to work. So it's up to, like, us new wave of builders to figure out how to better it. Unfortunately, with the governance system that they set up, in order to better it, you have to get the buy-in from all the people who built it who don't really care anymore because they're rich. And so if it's like, hey, lower inflation, and they're like, I built my entire 50 employee company just based on selling this inflation and never having to work again, which we're actually seeing, then they don't want to change. They don't want something better because they're already moving on to a new project. So it's difficult. I don't know if there is an easy fix, but something that would be a long-term fix, like a midterm long-term fix, would be designing things to look a lot more like the US governance, at least the way it was initially set up, where you have separation, you have checks and balances, there's NFT components, there's KYC components, and there still is, like, a overall, anyone can vote, but anyone's vote with the Atom token would only be part of the governance process. It would have to pass multiple houses, it would have to pass judiciary, like that kind of stuff. And again, this has been built out for different projects, just it's hard to get, Lindy, it's hard to get established projects to migrate when they're like, oh, we're doing fine, we're worth billions of dollars.
I'm always under the impression that governance has always been a hindrance to innovation. And then, you know, being on Luna Classic, I understand that governance gets messy. I think more or less, like, how do you get governance or a governance system, whether it be whichever chain that, you know, individuals are a part of, like, how do you streamline or just get governance to move? I mean, you've got validators, you know, and I think I asked Reese this in our previous episode, like, you know, it's always been a big stickler. Like, there's this huge disconnect between validators who vote and representative to their delegators. There's a gap in knowledge between development understanding and what to vote on. It's like, can these guys even understand or read code or understand the consequences if they implement it, if anything at all? And, you know, can they make an informed decision trying to figure out, like, hey, does the risk outweigh, does the reward outweigh the risk if we do this? Quite often I find myself in a situation of, like, no, they can't. I mean, am I just negative Nancy here?
No, you're not. That's just the surface of the issues. I mean, yeah, you're relying on these validators to push code that they're not really reading, that you hope isn't, you know, rugging everybody, which we've seen Prop 16, like, that does happen sometimes. And meanwhile, now these validators are getting, like, who just, you know, allegedly run security for these networks, but that's not even set up properly. But these validators are the ones who get the votes of everybody else. They're actually incentivized to not relay that there are ongoing props to their community members, because if they do, they actually lose voting power because they're voting with your voting power. So they're, you know, optimized to, like, stay silent. The people who could get involved in governance and push and, like, read this and be like, hey, this maybe isn't safe or whatnot, why really should they? Because they're, you know, they're running validators on 60 different chains. So they don't really care about your chain in particular, which makes it even less secure. Like, none of it is designed in a way that makes sense. Like, we should, the Kujira's tried things like Senate, like, that idea makes sense, where it's like, maybe KOLs and people who are more involved in the ecosystem themselves get more governance power. You could relay governance power to people that you trust instead of just people who run computers and lease them out from LeaseWeb for $80 a month. like that. My whole thing with tokenomics is like, we're having these high inflation and we're just giving all of it arbitrarily to validators and arbitrarily to stakers. Like, oh, you're securing the network, but there's no penalty for decentralizing the network, or for centralizing the network, for being the number one validator. It's actually a much higher risk delegating to the bottom validator, which is doing more to secure the network. Additionally, we don't have things like tax brackets set up so that you tax the higher people more. You don't have decentralization in of type of hardware. You don't have decentralization in countries. None of that kind of stuff is factored in. And I've offered all this to like Cosmos and everything, and like Ada wouldn't even like look at it or talk to me. So I'm actually building some really cool stuff for smaller new projects because, you know, Adam wouldn't talk to me. So if they don't care, I'll go where I'm going to get paid. And that's part of the problem.
Wow. If you can't go to Adam, I mean, you can go to other projects within Adam or Cosmos itself, right? Or no?
Yeah. I mean, I fundamentally, like, I worked for 2 years as an idealist, just building a bunch of shit, like completely unpaid. My team completely unpaid. Like it's been humbling, but at the same time, we've been right the entire time and we're proving it. At this point, I've made enough of a name for myself. I have a decent client base. I've got a tokenomics firm that is like going around and doing this kind of stuff. And it's like my ideas still work. I've had time to build this out, to fledge it out, to make models of it. And yeah, if people pay me in my firm, I'm going to give it to them and they can build this out. And then at some point, Adam and other people are going to be jealous and pissed and be like, oh, we should adopt it. And then it gets the same governance debate. Like, look at Neutron. And then Adam's like, oh, well, we should enable Cosm Wasm. And then Neutron's like, oh no, we gave you community pool funds. You can't compete with us. Like, we're your babies. And so like, if we build other things that, you know, are able to commoditize or productize things that were initially built for Adam, but that they never had an actual vision for, then does Adam copy it and compete with us? Or do they try to buy us out? Like, I really don't know, but it would have made a lot more sense for Adam to have some kind of central authority and some kind of actual business vision. And they never did. And they haven't really entertained talking to people who do.
So if somebody wants to hire you, how can they get a hold of you? Basically throw out a plug for yourself, because it sounds like you're pretty damn good at what you do. And maybe somebody out there wants to give you some work.
Thank you, fam. Twitter. I'm on Telegram 24/7. You could, AstroVault Telegram chat. I'm a pretty easy guy to get a hold of, as you guys noticed. But yeah, my Twitter bio now, I've got a link to Dopenomics. We just finally made a company for my tokenomics firm.
I like that people. Name.
Thanks. And then obviously AstroVault. Anything that I do in consulting, I make sure I tie it into AstroVault. It's kind of like, one, it helps pay the bills in the short term, but two, it builds us liquidity and it builds us more partnerships. For AstroVault to scale like beyond Coinbase, obviously that's bold as hell. It is possible. We do have the first mover advantage for what we're doing. We don't have the capital in the background and the networking and all the sketchy people behind us that a lot of these better funded projects do. So it's going to take a lot of work, and part of this consulting gets us the partnerships, gets us the exposure, the experience, and the network to make that happen.
One quick thing I wanted to ask about AstroVault. I was telling some people that I was, you know, that I talked to that are traders, you know, that had spoke with you, and I was really impressed with you. And it sounds like you're doing some pretty great stuff over at AstroVault. So I had them look for you, and there wasn't a listing on CoinMarketCap, and then there was a very, very minimalist listing on CoinGecko. Is there any reason for that strategically?
Yeah, they suck. CoinGecko, it should have been day one, and we had literal comms with their team, and they just gave us the runaround out of nowhere. Like, we had lots of listings that are on AstroVault listed with the AstroVault pair on CoinGecko. We launch our token, they just ghosted us. I'm like, what the hell? Like, this isn't okay. They're, oh, fill out this form. Like, we filled this out months ago. Oh, we changed the form. Here's the new one. Like, okay, we filled this out, just no reply. Like, for weeks, we finally got two of our pairs, which AXP has like 6 or 7 pairs. We got like two of our pairs on CoinGecko like yesterday. So finally, that's something. CoinMarketCap, they take like, they take weeks if you pay them $5,000, which we're not going to. And if you don't, they take months. That is the business behind them getting this big of a user base, and it's bullshit. So yeah, it's going to take time. We're not worried about looking really professional over the next 2 months. We're worried about outscaling Coinbase. So our time horizon is a lot bigger than the initial concerns.
What's the time frame, do you think? And again, just to throw an arbitrary, I mean, I understand like this answer is going to be more arbitrary than an absolute one. I mean, what do you think is like the time frame? Like, are we looking at 2 years, maybe 5 years? I mean, Coinbase is a, I mean, that's a that's a titan, dude.
10 to 15.
Okay.
Yeah, it's you can never predict even what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years. If we're even going to be alive, but what it would take to do that, like Coinbase is going to scale. Coinbase is going to outplace. It's going to replace banks. But then they're going to get tied up in their legal hurdles. They're going to have their own bureaucracy that slows them down. It's really important to my team to, yes, we need to scale. Yes, we need more people, but to keep the barriers low, to keep the median amounts and whatnot low, to not, I've been a part of some bloated teams and it's frustrating as hell. I don't want to have to get through 6 hours of meetings to then start work. And that's been the case too many damn times.
Oh, you mean like a meeting about a meeting about a meeting about a meeting kind of scenario? Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't love corporate America.
Yeah. And at some size or scale like that is going to be happening. And so, you know, that's happening at Coinbase right now and they're spending so much money, which they've got. But the bigger they get, the slower they're going to go. While we're small, we're making so many builds and so many advancements. Like, we have side projects in AstroVault that themselves can be multi-billion dollar businesses. Like, some of the news we're going to be bringing you guys in a couple months is insane. We're first to get licensing for shit that people haven't been doing before. So, if we can get all of this while, like, set up and moving before people even know who we are, then when the money and the fame and, like, people like start seeing us and looking at us and talking to us and our DMs are blowing up with thousands of DMs a day. We don't have to slow down as much, at least Lord willing that actually does become a real problem. We actually do get to that level of scale where that is an issue. But eventually like bloat or in some way, shape or form is going to occur. We're trying to make sure that we're building a foundation that doesn't encourage that. Look at Elon Musk took over Twitter, fired 90% of the staff, then hired back like 10%, and they're running way better now than they did with four times the employees. Like that, yeah. That's real.
Yeah, no, I got that hint when he took over and then got rid of it, because that was the big criticism from, well, mainstream media, if you know where I'm getting at. And then I think that's where people get stuck in their own little world, where all of a sudden, like, what if you don't have the amount of manpower, if you don't have the need in manpower, you're not going to get as much done when it's quite the opposite. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, sometimes I forget that, like, maybe I don't need all these heads and trying to departmentalize. Maybe one person could do two or three tasks at a time, and just for the sake of efficiency and avoiding bloating within the team or organizations to where decisions can be made much quicker. That's the advantage, what it seems like that you have in with AstroVault. But all things considered, if you're going to scale up, how do you play this in your mind where you can, I mean, if you can't prevent it 100%, how do you, you know, what are the plays that you have in mind to mitigate that?
Yeah. Really focus corporate docs. Our team motto is build cool shit with cool people. Focusing on integrity and loyalty in the hiring process, which everyone says that not very many people execute. We've had really good and competent and confident, capable people who have wanted to work for us, and we've said no. And when we were a bit more immature, like, we had good people and they left when times got tough, and that put us in bad spaces. And we're like, this isn't worth it. We don't need any specific person. Like, if I die, the AstroVault vision goes on. There's any contingencies, like, no funds are going to be lost. Like, it's going to be uncomfortable, but we have, even with the small team, we have good enough ops stack that we're able to move on. And if we want to build a decentralized business, we need that to be true at all levels of scale. It's pipelining, it's streamlining different processes, automating what can be automated, being really, really aware of time. We have one team meeting per week, and it's usually about 30 minutes. Other than that, like, we don't take time away from our devs to be hands on keyboard. We don't take away time from me. Like, if I'm going to be in a meeting, it should be with an external party to get liquidity in, because that's what's going to make us money. Instead of just talking to my friends, which we do talk and whatnot, we have like open rooms, but that slows us down. So building out that kind of time structure instead of like, oh yeah, no, we should talk every week too. Let's set up a weekly call Thursday at 1:30 and whatnot. And let's do that with eight other different employees. And we just, you know, sink around and have coffee with different people every single day and nothing fucking gets done. Because that's what a lot of the big teams that raise $20, $30 million are doing.
I'm having like issues with my phone. Give me a second. Okay. So going forward. Okay. There we go. It's like things were lagging out. And I couldn't unmute myself. When, you know, with that, like, I mean, while you're building your, I mean, you got your clientele foundation base, like, and you're building it up. I mean, you know, there's, I mean, Cosmos is only so, I mean, Cosmos is big, but at some point you're going to have to cross chain, like, I don't know, ETH or Solana. Like, is there any plans for that?
Yep. I mean, Uniswap earns $0 in revenue. They finally like, oh, they were worth $4 billion with no revenue, but now they're going to extract a tiny amount of fees. Now they're worth $8 billion. Like that's the science fairs that we're, you know, employing. It's ridiculous. Even if they do a fee switch, that's cute. They earn nothing from the liquidity that they have. They have billions of dollars in liquidity and they earn literally nothing from it. Astrovault goes and gets built on Ethereum. We're making tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in Ethereum per year that we own. And there's no reason that we can't, and we will.
That sounds like, oh my God, like I'm gonna get chastised for saying this, but it really sounds like the Luna Classic community. It's like we have liquidity. I mean, I know like it's nowhere near as big, but it almost feels like you have too many people making too many damn decisions and not knowing how to effectively use that money. You know, it's like the community pool is there, but as far as assessing where to move it, I feel like we're always at a roadblock. And I go back to governance. It's like, does anybody know how to make a damn decision here?
Yeah, your time horizon is too small. Everyone is focused on what's going to be the next narrative. How do we capitalize on it to get a couple more investors in to survive another 3 months? Survive another 6 months. Nobody's actively out here thinking, like, what is it going to take to be the winners in 10 years? To be the winners in 50 years? How do you build something that is going to outlast world government? Nobody has that time horizon. And if you don't, you cannot possibly succeed because whatever you're dabbling in is not driving towards something. And that's an issue with absolutely everything in crypto right now.
Okay. And I would almost say, and I don't know if this is a defense or a compliment to what you just said. I mean, we're a generation of quick or instant gratification. And then you've got this mindset that's basically has permeated society throughout the Western culture. Like, how do you break through that? I mean, quite frankly, let's be honest, you know, like the only generation I see that has that type of load of patience are like, I don't know, boomers or the generation before that may have, you know, it's like these guys didn't grow up with social media where it's like instant dopamine hits left and right. And like for you and I mean, that, you know, millennials and Gen Z, we have to get our hit of dopamine left and right. So it's like if we can't get that set of satisfactions,
now you tie that instant dopamine to money as well. So now you get instant pumps. And with a traditional old fashioned company, if you want to get rich, you have to build to a point where you're able to hit your exit strategy. You have to get to a point of success where you can be acquired or do like another full round of investment that, or actually build something sustainable. God forbid it, you know, that is what it used to take. And now you just have to keep people interested until your vesting finishes. Why should you focus on a 10-year time horizon where if you get one fake media post and whatnot, you get a 12% pump and you can sell immediately because everything you have is fully liquid? And then why would you care or still be loyal to that ecosystem? Because you're out. You're not invested anymore. You have no skin in the game. Like, that's realistically a huge problem. I talked about like the issue with Astrovault. Understand your axioms. The biggest risk with Astrovault is that everything that we support and all of this that we're building in crypto goes to zero. And if everything else does, then eventually so do we. We have a treasury right now of like almost $2 million. If everything goes to zero, then our treasury is as low as every other DEX's, which is zero. But if anything succeeds, we're going to benefit from it. And if you'll notice, like if you look through our listings, you look through our social media, look through where our focus has been, we're not focused on on, I guess it looked like we're chasing the narrative of DeepIn. We've been focused on DeepIn for 2 years. I actually went and I redesigned Jackal's tokenomics to help grow and incentivize their growth of sales. We built the first ever permissionless, global, decentralized sales force where anybody in the world can be a professional Jackal storage salesman, and the protocol is going to make protocol profit from it. And the number one validator in Jackal, one of the number one holders of Jackal, is the AstroVault DAO, because we're earning it, because we're supporting their liquidity, and we invested in them when they were at 2 cents, and now they're racked up to like 60 or 70. DeepIn is going to be huge. We're growing decentralized businesses. Decentralized businesses are going to succeed some way, shape, or form. They make global business far more efficient. A lot of the vaporware, we're growing an ecosystem that will someday develop. They probably won't, but DeepIn will. And if DeepIn does, we're huge owners and supporters and builders of DeepIn, and we're going to help them grow and succeed. And if they do, we can't fail.
My problem is with a lot of these devs who want to, like, we want to build an ecosystem, as you put it. A lot of these guys are chasing the clout. And unfortunately, when you got so many social media influencers that are giving these guys a voice, I mean, I worry that a lot of these influencers find themselves in a position where they're not even conducting or vetting these guys, where they're giving them unjustifiable clout. Not to say that they don't deserve it or anything like that. It's just, you know, how do these... You know, because there is a combination of the two. It's not just the narrative itself, but the narrative that's exacerbated by those who play into this category. You know, at some point, what I'm wondering is like, are these influences, or they're going to continue to keep doing the same thing over and over? And is
they actually do a really good vetting process. It's like, hey, pay me $4,000 for a tweet thread.
Oh wow! Okay. Wow. this is like through what, an airdrop?
Yeah, every influencer you know is a sellout. Like the entire social media aspect of things is a sham, and there's so little authenticity because people are focused on making money, which I get it. Like, don't get me wrong, I want to make money too, but there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And what's nice about my team being unfunded for so damn long is that like anyone who was chasing short-term gains and whatnot left. My team is, they're all brilliant. Like every single one of like our core team are like literal geniuses and some of the best at what we do. And we've sat here and we've worked for free for years because we believe in the vision. That's not going away. Money doesn't change people. Money just exposes people. And if we'll do that when we're broke, and when we started, I was at the top of the last bull market. I was pretty rich. Like I don't change. They don't change. Authenticity is going to come through. Like despite whatever happens in AI and whatnot, as it becomes harder and harder to find out who's real, who's not, authenticity is going to shine through. It's already done wonders for me with like my tokenomics business. Like you can tell when you talk to me, I'm fucking real. I'm going to be honest 100% of the time, like it or not. And people want that, which they should. Like I fucking want that. And so as that happens, we're going to, Lord willing, move towards a society that is based on longer term vision again. You're starting to see the woke mind virus kind of dissipate.
Yeah, no, it's God. Oh man. No, I was like, what was it? Elon Musk said that money is a tool that amplifies you know, the real person behind it. It's not a good or evil, it's just a tool, an amplifier. You know, if you're a good person and you have all this money, well, no, it's not in the means of like, oh, I have all this money, when you give it to charity, that doesn't mean you're a good person. You know, there could be a malicious motive behind it. Maybe you just kind of skirt by taxes or whatever, depends on who you ask, or, you know, or it'll amplify somebody's sense of narcissism, you know, like, hey, check out my Lambo or whatnot. But I mean, again, that time will tell. Time will tell to see what money will do to me. Yeah, so I'm going to do what I can to stay humble. I know we're coming up on the hour here. Ness, do you got anything else?
Yeah, I have one last quick question for you. Hopefully the answer is relatively quick here. If I remember right, when we spoke earlier, your answer was a bit of a hot take for the crypto community. Comparing crypto to fiat, you said they had a lot of the same problems. Can you elaborate upon that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, why is it money? I'm not a gold standard truther, but in general, the reason that there used to be some kind of standard in some way, shape, or form is because like money needs to have some kind of basis of acceptance. The purpose of a money is to be an intermediary change of goods, which means everybody wants to be the one to create money, because if you are and you're able to, you know, tap into the supply in some way, shape, or form, then you're able to become rich without ever offering goods or services. And that's what everybody wants. Look at crypto. Look at Terra. That's an issue when realistically it's commodities that we want to trade between. So everybody's trying to create their own money. Like, look at decentralized stablecoins. They're a joke. The whole idea is like, hey, you never have to sell our currency anymore because you could just mint dollars. Like, whether it doesn't matter if that's Terra or USK or insert decentralized stablecoin here. It's all the exact same goal, which can be done. Like, that's how the fractionalized banking system works. It can be done, but it has to be understood, and it's not. So my concern is primarily that we're blindly following people who don't really know where they're going. But additionally, yeah, it's like the US dollar has been the best currency we've seen, I don't know, possibly in history. That might be a short-sighted view, but look at what it's built. It is very good as a money. I think I told you guys on the previous call that I think Bitcoin is a terrible money, and I stand by that. If you understand like what the purpose of money is, what its goal and objectives are, it's not, money's not meant to be a store of value. Money is meant by design to devalue over time to incentivize growth of economy and velocity. It needs to. Maybe not as fast as the U.S. dollar has, is my argument.
Well, the U.S. dollar has the military. Like, we have guns that enforce it and impose it. I mean, also, you know, all things considered, I mean, we've also enjoyed a long time as it being the reserve currency for the world. It's like countries have to buy U.S. dollars to buy oil. You know, what happens when the U.S. Currency is removed from that? You know, what happens to our economy?
It's starting to occur, actually.
Is it? But,
yeah, with the BRICS nations and whatnot. That's starting to become an issue with the petrodollar.
This is way easier if you look at it in terms of crypto. If you go through the deals, and it, unfortunately, you can't really audit the dollar, one of the issues in it. But when they made the original deal with Saudi, it was contingent that they make oil only purchasable by the US dollar. And when they did that, they printed so many damn dollars to give to them to set that up. And then other people had to buy more. So yeah, the price of the dollar, the same way the price of Bitcoin, the price of anything, is not by supply and demand. It's by buy pressure versus sell pressure. And they force other currencies to literally purchase the dollar to make the price of the dollar go up. Meanwhile, they printed a shit ton of extra in the supply. Think of that as like a giant cliff, a giant supply shock. The FDV, if you will, the market cap of the dollar, shot up way more than the price would have suggested it should have, because the supply just went so much damn higher. We look at the inflation. Go ahead.
Oh, so basically, if, for example, like, we have all this money and it, you know, things that aren't being accounted for. I mean, let's be honest, like, they changed the M2 graph where people go can refer back to see where how much money has been circulating. But say, for example, like, if the Saudis decide to, for example, man, we are going down a rabbit hole, but we're going there. You know, the Saudis one day would say, like, hey, we'll have a moment of a change of heart. And they say, like, yeah, we're going to stop using the US dollars. I mean, that means like our money, our dollars stop circulating. That means we have money that is circulating, but not moving. I mean, that would cause I don't want to say a hyperinflation, but pretty close to it. Am I looking at that correctly?
Yes. I'll give you some more terms to better understand it, a bit more of a ontology. Do you know Milton Friedman?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So Milton Friedman argued that we should not look at inflation as the price of the dollar, which is what we do. Inflation is the CPI. That's the purchasing power of your dollar. Sure, we just printed another 50% of the supply, but like, the purchasing power has only gone down by 4%. We had 4% inflation. Well, the issue is what happens when that newly circulating supply really hits the market and starts actively trading. Milton Friedman said, no, we need to have inflation be supply side factoring, where if you print 50% of the supply, you call that 50% of inflation. And if the purchasing power only goes down 8%, then yeah, your market cap went up 42% or whatever. Not exactly that way, but in general, the overall value, FDV of the dollar, if you will, got a lot higher because of that inefficiency of the market. The issue is we've pretended inflation is only 6-7% for so many years, when every single year we're printing another 50% of the supply. Eventually, when we pull out of those oil deals, that circulating money is flowing right now. It's just flowing in those trading pairs. It's like what happens if you lose your Coinbase listing for Terra. It's like, well, all of those liquidity providers who are using that are going to go liquidity provide other assets. And the only way they can do that is to sell Luna. Like if it's Luna that lost the Coinbase listing, they're going to have to sell Luna for Bitcoin or for something else. But they literally have to sell that token for something else. And if you look at the on a balance, it's like, oh yeah, cool. Yeah, that price is going to go way down. So yes, when they do that, the price of the dollar is going to go way down because they're selling the dollar for euro, for bricks, most likely, for gold, for Bitcoin, maybe. And as that happens, the price of the dollar goes down. We're currently pretending that inflation is what the price impact of the dollar is. As the price of the dollar goes down, it's going to say inflation is 100, 200%, even if printing zero. Doesn't matter what the interest, like what the lending market interest rate is. It matters what the price effect is of the dollar.
I just had a moment of, okay. So if anybody was to see their position within any crypto, regardless what it is, and let me know if I'm getting ahead of myself or make sure I don't put the cart before the horse here. We could potentially, if these currencies that we hold and that we have a position in, if somehow these coins were to be Juno, Whale, Kuji, Kava, whatever, or any other crypto, and regardless of the ecosystem, if they're able to say like pair with a real world asset, not for the sake of utility, because I think I've had many conversations with Tank here in the Cosmos with the IBC gang about utility, but rather than tying it directly to a utility, pair it. Like literally how we trade US dollars for Luna Classic here in the community or whatever, you could potentially see 1,000x. Am I getting ahead of myself here? Like what if Luna Classic or Archway was traded with oil instead? What are you thinking? Am I getting ahead of myself?
It's a good thought experiment. I don't think it's practical at this time because sure. Oil isn't like, yes, I believe that long-term oil, gold, real world stocks are going to be traded on decentralized, centralized exchanges, that there will be RWAs, that stocks will be tokenized. Everyone knows that's going to be the case. It'll be in regulatorily compliant DEXs, but it will be what kind of feels like DEXs. Where you have like literal custody over your RWA and it can literally be traded for a barrel of oil. Won't be very efficient immediately, but it's way the hell more efficient than what we have currently. Okay. Now, having Luna or something be the base pairing against oil, once that happens, is potentially possible. The issue is the regulation from every country that would have to sign off on that and enable that exchange to happen. Right now, Bitcoin is one of the primary traders against oil currently because, really? You know, yeah, primary exchanges are Monday through Friday during New York operating hours and Bitcoin trades 24/7. So the off exchange ones, what they do is instead of dollar to oil, because they can't do that, they can do dollar to Bitcoin and Bitcoin to oil. And that's a primary utility of Bitcoin right now.
Holy shit. So Bitcoin's already setting the catalyst for it, for any crypto to participate in this transactions. I mean, even then, like Bitcoin, there's no central authority for Bitcoin. I mean, Cosmos can potentially get to that point here in the near future, I would imagine.
So Cosmos really, really can get to that point. My vision of where I see crypto being in 5-10 years is not like, oh, look at all of these different ecosystems of crypto projects, but rather the underlying backbone for how traditional business works. McDonald's isn't printing out all these little monopoly pieces. Instead, they just pop up on your kid's phone because your kid's going to have a phone. The monopoly piece is going to be there and you could trade them in for your $1 million prize if you get it. They're all NFTs meanwhile, and they're not going to put them on Ethereum, not because of the gas, but because they can't control it. McDonald's is going to want to control their own thing because they're a business. They don't need that extra, like, hey, we're going to shut down your blockchain unless you pay us so much money, which is a risk. So they're going to have their own blockchain. Their own blockchain is probably going to be on Cosmos because it's the easiest, the best, and the cheapest. They're going to have 3 validators that they control. It's not going to be a decentralized blockchain. It doesn't need to be. It needs to work so that people can trade on it and own their shit. It's not going to have gas, but McDonald's is going to want to do a partnership with other things, and McDonald's is going to want to have a marketplace to sell and to trade these things, and that's going to connect to all of these other businesses through IBC, which realistically is the very best calling, basically between blockchains. One of my clients right now in tokenomics I'm working on, basically I'm setting them up to be the AMT, the Verizon of crypto, where like right now IBC, like you have to, you know, build landlines to everything else that wants to pick up a phone. Whereas if you have like a cell tower, everyone could just connect to that cell tower and have access to everybody else that connects. That's something that should have been Cosmos Hub. It's not. I'm building it instead with a different project. That will tie in to literal McDonald's, to all of these real world businesses. All of them will have crypto under the hood. Nobody will know it. You don't need to log in with a wallet when you're using your McDonald's app on your phone. It just all happens behind the scenes, but you own your Monopoly card. And you can work with anything else and any other business automated on your phone through IBC.
And any company can willy-nilly build their own blockchain in a snap of a finger.
Yep. And then when it comes to gas handling for interchain interactions, Atom can be the gas. They're already working to try to make Atom the, like, not only just an optional gas, but eventually the default gas for all these different things. That makes Atom an actual money for real-world tradable assets. Now, it's only things that are IBC connected, but I mean, Avalanche, Polkadot, Ethereum, they're working on Bitcoin IBC compatibility. Like, that's real. I know right now, like, half of Cosmos is, like, trying to say, hey, we can support Ethereum, too. It's like, stop trying. Like, what you have is so much better than Ethereum. We all know that. Ethereum just has money and people. That's the short-term sightedness. Focus on the real fucking businesses. You get them in, you don't care about Ethereum anymore. Real businesses aren't going to run on Ethereum.
Even Ethereum's got a plethora of inefficiencies in itself. We won't even go down that road. I mean, I can criticize it day in, day out, you know, until my face turns blue. It almost sounds like AstroVault could be perfectly positioned to, I don't know, house all this liquidity.
We are.
Fuck. Ness, you got anything else you want to drag me down another rabbit hole? Because like we are like 10 minutes
over.
Slow,
the only thing, man, I can think of is we have to find a really smart and ballsy enough Bitcoin maxi to challenge Eric's intellect, which is going to be very difficult. And possibly, if Eric's okay with it, have him back to debate this individual. But we have to find somebody that's worthy of it. Would you be open to that, Eric?
Dude, anytime, man.
Jesus.
Love talking economic philosophy.
I want to hear that debate so bad, because there's some Bitcoin maxis, I'm sure, that are going to disagree with you, but you make a hell of a case.
I wonder if there's any opportunity for other DEXs to partner up with AstroVault. Is that even a possibility or an option on the table?
Absolutely. We have one strong partnership. A little bit about the ideology of AstroVault. AstroVault isn't even like the dream of what we always wanted to build. It wasn't like we wanted to build real world businesses that use Web3 instead of traditional bank loans, or crowdsource loans and give ownership for it to grow decentralized businesses. Like, that makes so much sense. The margins for real world businesses to use Web3 instead of banks are fucking insane, especially with rehypothecation of non-operating capital. Anyways, big fucking words. The idea is DeFi was too fucking weak for real businesses like that to possibly be built. We had to build the stepping stone so that can happen. AstroVault is that stepping stone, and it's still the first. Still nobody else is building something strong enough. Uniswap is not strong enough. Osmosis is not strong enough. I know it's bold as fuck, like, oh, your $2 million market cap DEX is like that strong. Yeah, it really is. Look at the revenue numbers. Look at the margin. It really is. And so now we'll be able to support all these real-world businesses, but also, meanwhile, we're partnering with all these real world businesses to make that happen. With AstroVault, we envision the long-term trading involving liquidity hubs and routers. I don't have the team, the money, anything to make the world's prettiest and most connected router, where any user can go without like a whole bunch of different wallets and just be like, oh, well, I want to trade from this asset to this asset. I don't give a shit what chain it's on. I won't give a shit anything else. I just had this asset and I want that asset. Eventually, aggregators are going to be aggregated by aggregators. Like, somebody is going to win that fucking routing business and they're going to do incredibly well for them. I actually have my pick for who I think is going to do it, but it's brilliant. But how those trades are actually processed is going to be through liquidity hubs. AstroVault is the most logical liquidity hub. So if the user is saying like, hey, I want to trade whatever asset to Jackal, that trade's going to go through AstroVault. If they say whatever trade is going to go through Atom, AstroVault's going to be the liquidity hub. So as we service as many clients as we can, we become their liquidity hub. We charge them way less. We pay them way more. We support them in BizDev, marketing, infrastructure, every way we possibly can. We become their liquidity hub. Whoever's doing the aggregation, traders long-term won't use AstroVault directly. Our Gravitate rewards, we have volume incentives. Those are built-in referral fees for these aggregators, where if an aggregator routes trades through us, they also get paid part of the AXV through Gravitate. Like, all of that's already built in the initial model. We're just waiting for somebody to go win the aggregator battle. In the meantime, we're trying to establish ourselves as one of the primary liquidity hubs.
I'll be honest with you, like, I want to see White Whale DeFi partner up with you guys. I mean, I have a huge love for that team, but I think there's something here. I'm not an expert in this typical field. That's why we have you on here. I'm gonna have to wrap this up, man. We are like 16 minutes over. Eric, I want to appreciate your time and speaking with us. I definitely want to have you back and a Bitcoin maxi battle. Cage fight sounds really, really fun. I might be open to that idea. I want to give you the last word before I wrap it up. And then,
thank you guys so much for hosting. Thanks for a good conversation, for knowing about state nationals and whatnot. Like, that's fantastic. Not too many people that know about that kind of stuff, unfortunately. Honestly, like what you guys are doing, like the intro call and getting to meet you guys, and bringing like actual conversation to the real people and the real narratives instead of just hyping up projects. Like your guys' content, keep it up.
Thank you. And for anybody else, we've nested AstroVault.io up above. You guys can check them out. Give Eric a follow and get more updates as time goes by. And for everybody else listening in, I want to thank you. And we'll see you next time. Have a good one, guys.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known a politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of denolay stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the code and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10 stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Channel Spaces.